All right, we're starting here on the top of Dalet Amun Aleph. The Gemara here asks, "Bekama shiur stira? What is the duration of stira?" We have in the process of the sota, we have kinui, stira, and then tuma. Stira is the seclusion of this woman with the man that she's warned not to seclude with. Or in essence, what is the shir yichud? The time that they are alone, what is the defined amount of time where we then can suspect that possibly something happened? If the duration is too short, then we don't have any suspicions that anything happened because there wasn't enough time for there to be tuma. And again, obviously, if there's a lot of time, then the more suspicion that will arise. But what is that minimum standard? The way that the Braita lays it out is kedei tuma, kedei bia, kedei hara. So now the Braita here gives a number of definitions, but really qualifiers to what's happening over here, which is, number one, kedei tuma. So the stira is in order to perpetrate the crime, which means that there is tuma. How much is that? That's kedei bia, the amount of time it takes to do a bia. And then the last statement is kedei hara'a, which seems to be defining what type of bia we're speaking about. Dei hara'a, Rashi over here says, neshikat ever, the oto makom, which is only one dea with regards to what hara'a is. It's a machloket as to what hara'a is, whether it means contact between the private parts of the man and the woman, or the penetration of the crown of the male member into the woman. So here Rashi brings one of the two opinions, which is interesting because he brings the one that most of Rishonim don't necessarily subscribe to. But then we have now, after that, definitions of how much time that is. So these first three introductory qualifiers are telling us, in broad terms, what is kedei stira? What is the amount of time to be secluded? And then it gives you, well, that means kedei tuma, kedei bia, kedei ara. How much time is that? And now we're going to have what the Tanaim say. Kedei hafkafat dekel, the amount of time it takes to encircle a palm tree. Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, kedei mezigat kos, the amount of time it takes to dilute, titrate a cup of wine, where you are mixing the concentrated wine with the water, the amount of time it takes you to do that. Rabbi Yoshua Meir, kedei lishtoto, the amount of time it takes to drink a diluted cup of wine. Ben Azai Omer, kedei litzlot beitza, the amount of time it takes to roast an egg. Rabbi Akiva Omer, kedei lagoma, the amount of time it takes to swallow it, to consume it. Behuda ben Betero Omer, kedei ligmoa shlosh beitzim zo achar zo, the amount of time it takes you to swallow three eggs, one after the next. Rabbi Elazar ben Irmi Omer, kedei likshor garde nima, the amount of time it takes for a weaver to tie together strings or thread that has snapped. Chanin ben Pinchas Omer, kedei shetoshit yada l'toch piha l'tol kesam, the amount of time it takes for her to put her hand into her mouth to remove something that is stuck between her teeth. Palimo Omer, kedei toshit yada lasal litol kikar, and the time it takes for her to put her hand out and grab a loaf of bread from the basket. Afal pi shein rayal davar, even though there's no proof that that is the shiur, zeicha davar, there is some correlation between the shiur that Palimo is giving and a zonah, which is that the pasuk in Mishlei says, ki ba'ad isha zonah ad kikar lechem, that the one who gives themselves up to the zonah for the loaf of bread, somewhat cryptic pasuk in Mishlei, which the Gemara in the second half of today's daf will define or help us to understand what is the connection between the isha zonah and the kikar lechem. So the Gemara says, tevachol hani lamali, what do I need all of these introductory words here? Tzrichi, di tana kedei tuma. Have we said that stira, which the simple way to say it is the amount of time it takes to perpetrate the act, which is kedei tuma, havamina kedei tumata va'artzuta, it's the amount of time it takes to actually do the act of bia, but not only that, included in that is also the seduction. You have to give time for the preliminaries before there's actually a maseh bia. And so you would have thought, if the Braita just said kedei tuma, you would have thought that doesn't just include the act itself, but includes all of the seduction that leads to the act. Kamash malon, so that's why it gives you the next word, which is kedei bia. It's biyah without the seduction. V'itana k'dei biyah. If it just wrote k'dei biyah, avamina k'dei gemar biyah, I would have thought it means that a full biyah, that until he completes the act. K'mash malon k'dei hara'ah. Just the beginning of the act is already enough to be a violation of any din of arayot. Parshat arayot, Gemara learns out over there that hara'ah is sufficient to violate any of the isur arayot. So again here, by Neish Adish, all you need is the amount of time to be in violation of ni'uf. You just need k'dei hara'ah. Now v'iyash mi'inan k'dei hara'ah. So now what about just saying k'dei hara'ah and you'd be done? Havamina k'dei hara'ah v'artzota. Because had I just written hara'ah, I would have thought hara'ah includes not only the hara'ah, but also the seduction that leads into it. K'mash malon k'dei tumah. And then it goes back and says, oh, k'dei tumah, to tell you that that's not the case. Which is interesting because the Gemara before had a havamina that k'dei tumah was including the seduction. Now it's using k'dei tumah to say that it does not include the seduction. So it's a very long rashi over here, which explains how each word itself adds an additional dimension, and altogether the words give us this information. Had it just written hara'ah and not written tumah, I would thought that hara'ah includes the seduction. And if it just wrote k'dei bi'ah, k'dei hara'ah, what happens if it just wrote that? Lava mimayit artzuta. I wouldn't have excluded the seduction. Well, just say k'dei bi'ah means the act. And then k'dei hara'ah tells you how much of that act needs to be accomplished. But had it written both of those, I still would not have done that, because I would have said the reason that it writes k'dei hara'ah is to give definition to bi'ah. And therefore I would have not excluded the seduction part of it. So that's why you need all three of these words to tell you together. The combination of these three qualifiers gets us to the point where we know you don't need the seduction, and we know that it's focused on the act, but the act in terms of the halachic violation, which is k'dei hara'ah. Yes, this is the amount of time that would be required for yichud, for a husband and wife, in order to complete the nisuin. The shiurim that we're speaking about here obviously are very short shiurim. We are machmir, obviously, for the longer shiurim in yichud. Now that might have to do with what Tosafot notes over here, where all these shiurim over here, he says, B'Yushalmi, kol yilein shiurim, achar atarat sinar. Where all these shiurim here are given after the clothing has already been removed. The sinar is the undergarment of the woman. And once that's already been removed, this is the amount of time for the actual act to take place. But that means, in truth, in reality, you would need more time for yichud, because this is defining only the actual act of he'ara. It's not giving you the other aspects that you would need in a normal circumstance. If they went in clothed to the room, you'd have to give time for them to disrobe. And so that has to be incorporated in the time of yichud to consider it to be problematic. Now, whether our Gemara agrees with Yerushalmi or not is unclear over here. The Yerushalmi says all of these shiurim are after the Hatarat Sinar. Our Gemara never tells us where along the process this is. It only leaves out the seduction, doesn't leave out the other aspects, and it could be that our Gemara thinks that either it is incorporated in these shiurim and disagrees with Yerushalmi, or Tosafot is suggesting that seemingly our Gemara also is talking about the time after the removal of the sinar. And now the Gemara says, Bekama k'dei hara. So now, once we've defined what it is that we're looking for in the stira, which is k'dei tumah, k'dei biyah, k'dei hara'ah, which in essence, in the end, means we're looking for hara, because that's the act that is going to be defined as the illicit act, then the Tanaim over here give us the definition of k'dei hara'ah, which is k'dei hakafat hadekel, according to Rabbi Yishmael. Very minhi. We have a problem is because we have an alternate braita. V'nistira, v'kama shi'ur stira, lo shamanu. So what is the duration of seclusion? We don't have a defined amount. It gives you some sort of generic statement. It means seclusion. But how much is seclusion? Shomer v'hi nitme'a. So then it says, v'nistira v'hi nitme'a. It gives definition to what the stira is. That's the amount of time for tumah. HaVeomer k'dei k'tuma, k'dei bi'a, k'dei hara'a. Same as our bright that we brought before. But now it starts to introduce the problem, which is k'dei chazarat dekel divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer, who in the previous bright suggested that it was k'dei mizigat kos, the amount of time it takes to dilute, titrate a cup of wine, he over here says chazarat dekel. The Gemara's havamina at this point is that chazarat dekel is the same as hakafat dekel. It's the same as encircling the dekel. Chazarat means you return to the same location around the tree. That would make it that Rabbi Eliezer now is in conflict with the Rabbi Eliezer we found in the other Braita. And that's not only true of Rabbi Eliezer, but that's true of the remainder of the Tanaim in the Braita. Each one of the Tanaim now is actually going to drop down a level from the previous Braita. So Rabbi Eliezer is taking up the Shita, supposedly, or looks like that of Rabbi Shmuel. And then Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Kedei Mizigat Kos. Rabbi Yeshua is picking up what Rabbi Eliezer said in the previous Braita. Ben Azai Omer, Kedei Lishtoto. Ben Azai says the amount of time it takes to drink it, which was the Shita of Rabbi Yeshua in the previous Braita. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Kedei Litzlot Beitza. Amount of time it takes to roast an egg, which was the Shita of Ben Azai in the previous Braita. Yehuda ben Matero Omer, Kedei Ligoma. The amount of time it takes to swallow it, which again was the Shita of Rabbi Kiva in the previous Braita. The Gemara sometimes, when it has situations like this, will say, Krovim divrezeh le divrezeh. They'll just give it a loose definition, which is, they're very similar, but slight differences, slight nuances between them. Or, they will say, Kula chada shiurahu. It's all one shiur. The Gemara beginning of Brachot, with dealing with Benesh Mashot, says something similar, which is that you have numerous deot. And the Gemara then says, along the lines of that chada shiurahu, everybody is giving the same shiur. The problem with doing that here is that the brightot seem to indicate that it's exact because of the fact that you see it changes. In the other brighta, they have different opinions being assigned to the individuals. The fact that the Gemara is bothered by that shows you or indicates to you that Gemara believes that this is not all chada shiurahu. Otherwise, you could have just dismissed the whole thing. But the fact that there are two brightot and their differences of opinion makes it the Gemara, or leads the Gemara to believe that we're not talking about Chadashiurahu. That's one interesting note. The other interesting note about the Braita is, these Braita don't conform to the norms of quotes from Tanaim. And that is, in general, we have an order. Whenever you find a Mishnah, we know that Rabbi Meir is brought first, then Rabbi Yehuda, then Rabbi Yossi. It's not who we pass them like necessarily, but that's the order of, sometimes it has to do with, if it's a Rebbe, we'll bring the Rebbe before the Talmid, or if it's the one who is sharper, we'll bring them first. There are certain protocols that Abaye's Shita is always brought before Rova's Shita. You always call Beit Shammai and then you call Beit Hillel. So over here, it's interesting that the Braita doesn't follow that protocol. First of all, because it quotes Ben Azai prior to Rabbi Akiva. Ben Azai is a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. So normally in a Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva would be quoted first and then in Ben Azai, which does not happen here in the Braita. Number two is, we also, as Tosafot points out, that why Rabbi Shmuel is before Rabbi Eliezer ve Rabbi Yoshua. Because we always have in the Mishnah, the order would be Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, and then Rabbi Shmuel. So you have a breach from the normal protocol. Very good. So Tosafot says, like you're suggesting, that here the Braita ordered them in the duration, the span of their duration, rather than the normal protocol. And so therefore, you get from that, it teaches you something about the nature of the shiur that they're giving, which is that each successive shiur is a little longer than the previous shiur, and that's why the Braita ordered them this way, because again, they're connected. Rabbi Kiva, who's saying k'dei l'gom'ah, when he says to swallow an egg, he's talking about a roasted egg that Ben Azai had suggested before. So Rabbi Kiva comes afterwards, both because, in terms of the context, it makes more sense to talk about the roasting the egg first, and then the swallowing of the egg. But also because the way Tosafot suggests over here that maybe Yesh Lomar the Seder Achilav Shtiyah Samich, that it puts together the order of the way people eat or drink, or the amount of time, that meaning that it's getting longer in duration as you move through the Braita. Now the Gemara says, Kasaka Datra, Hainu Akafat Dekel, Hainu Chazarat Dekel. We would have thought that based on the way the Braita looks, which matches up with the other Braita, then Chazarat HaDekel would equate to Hakafat Dekel in the previous Braita. So, Hatamam Rabbi Shmuel, Kedei Hakafat Degel. In that first braita, Rabbi Shmuel was the author of that opinion. Upligi Rabbi Eliezer Alei. And Rabbi Eliezer argued on that and said, Kedei Mizigat Kos. Hacha Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Kedei Chazarat Degel. And here, Rabbi Eliezer takes up the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. So, Amar Abaye says, the Havamina is wrong. The fact that the Gemara says, Kasal Kadatcha, you would have thought, shows that the answer to that question is, you're wrong. You're mistaken about that premise, which is Amar Abaye, Akafa Beregel, Chazara Beruach. That when it comes to encircling the Dekel, that is walking around the Dekel. Chazara means the Dekel is blown by the wind, so it sways in the wind, and then it comes back. That's what Chazara the Dekel is. Boy Ravashi, Chazara Beruach, Kehechi de Azil Vahadar. What does it mean when it sways in the wind? Does it mean it goes back and forth? Avazul hadarati, back and forth, or dilma keichi da azul vaati vahodar kai beduchte? Or is it back and forth and then back to the central or the parking position, the original position that it was in? Does it have to come back to that static state? Gemara leaves that as unresolved. And as Tosafot over here notes, Ravashi will ask a number of questions about the shiurim that we have here. What is the definition of them? But he only asks them about certain shiurim. Other shiurim, he ignores or doesn't mention at all. Tosafot says it's either because we're going to see in the Gemara now, it's going to parallel certain shiurim together with items that seemingly are well known. Or I would say that in cases where you're talking about a dekel, walking around a dekel, what size dekel? So you can assume that everything is benoni, is a middle ground. That's the way the Gemara defines shiurim when it talks about an egg. A beitzah, what type of beitzah we're speaking about? A middle-sized beitzah. When we're talking about a revi'it yayin, when we're talking about a kos yayin, we're talking about a revi'it yayin. There are certain defined sizes, and every time we talk about a dekel, we're talking about a normal-sized dekel, a standard palm tree. So that's where Ravashi does not ask. When you give shiurim that are somewhat unusual, or not your typical items, then Ravashi will come in and say, what do you mean in this case? When you're talking about the swing in the wind, that's something that is not, there's no standard swing in the wind. So what does it mean? Back and forth, or back and forth, and then back to the static state. So now Gemara says, okay, so now you're relieving that question by saying that Chazarat HaDekel is not Hakafat HaDekel, or in essence, you're saying that Chazarat HaDekel equals Kedei Mizigat Kos. But then, Hatam Amar Rabbi Eliezer Kedei Mizigat Kos, Hacha Kedei Chazarat Dekel. So, that seems like Rabbi Eliezer changed his mind. Gemara is going to answer, Idi Vidi Chad Shiurahu. It's all one Shiur. And the Gemara says, Hatam Amar Rabbi Yoshua. Yoshua is the opinion that comes after Rabbi Eliezer. There he says, Kedei Lishtoto. Amount of time it takes to drink a diluted cup of wine. Hacha Amar Kedei Mizigat Kos. In our second braita, he says that it's the amount of time to dilute, to titrate the cup of wine. Ema. So here's the solution to the problem, which is Kedei Limzog Vilishtot. Over here, when he says Miziga, he doesn't mean just to dilute or titrate it. He means to dilute, titrate it, and then drink it. That means that in one braita it caught half of his opinion. When he says lishtoto, doesn't mean just to drink it. It means to dilute it and drink it. And in this braita, when it brought down that he meant diluting, it didn't mean just diluting, it means diluting and drinking it. V'leima idividi chadishi urahu. Gemara says, well, if that's the case, why don't you just do what you did with Rabbi Eliezer before and say, it's all one shiur. He's giving you kedei lishtoto in one braita, kedei mizigat kos in the other braita, but maybe they're equal. Gemara says, in Cain, Hainu Rabbi Eliezer. If you do that, then you make them completely equal in their shiurim. There's no distinction anymore between the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. Because you're telling us Rabbi Yoshua believes that drinking the cup and diluting the cup are the same, and Rabbi Eliezer believes that the swaying of the palm tree and the diluting of the cup are the same. That means now that you're saying both Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Yishmael have the same opinion. So that you can't do. So now the Gemara moves on to the next stage. Hatamamar Ben Azai Kedei Litzlot Beitza. Over there, Ben Azai said the amount of time to roast an egg. Hachamar Kedei Lishtoto. And over here, he says to drink or to consume that egg. Idi Vidi Chad Shiurahu. It's all one shiur. Hatamamar Rabbi Akiva Now we move on to the next shita, is Rabbi Akiva's shita. Kedei legum a, the amount of time it takes to swallow that egg. Halcha amar kedei litzlot beitza. And over here he talks about it being the roasting of the egg. So ema kedei litzlot beitza ulegum a. The answer is it's the amount of time it takes to roast the egg and to consume it. So again, when Rabbi Akiva mentioned the gum'a before, he meant to roast it and to swallow it. And over here, where he mentions to roast it, he meant roasting and swallowing it. V'le'ima idi v'idi chad shi'urahu. Why don't you add insert for Rabbi Akiva what you did for Ben Azai and say it's all one shi'ur? Where it says, imkein, hainu Ben Azai. Because then you'll end up, Rabbi Akiva then will be equated to Ben Azai. So if you're noting what the Gemara is doing here is, alternately, every second opinion, it's saying it's chad shi'urahu. And then the opinion in between, you have to draw some sort of distinction. Otherwise, you can't, they'll start, everything will be equal. Which might be the answer in the end. Maybe everything is equal and that would solve all your problems here. But the Gemara is not taking that approach. And therefore, in the first instance, you're reconciling Rabbi Eliezer's opinion and saying Chadashi Uruhu. That means that the second opinion, which is Rabbi Yoshua, can't be Chadashi Uruhu, otherwise you'll be equated to Rabbi Eliezer. Therefore, we say Rabbi Yoshua meant Kedei Limzog Vilishtot. The next opinion is Ben Azai. Ben Azai will say Chadashi Uruhu. Then you move down to Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva can't be Chadashi Uruhu because otherwise he'll be equal to Ben Azai. So for Rabbi Akiva we say, it's Kedei Litzlot Beitza Ulegum'a. And by doing that we will reconcile their opinions between the two Braitot. By the way, the fact that the Gemara doesn't define it here, but the Gemara in other places tells us that whenever he used the Shiur of Kedei Litzlot Beitza or the Galgel Beitza, it means a middle size, a benoni, chicken egg, which is the egg that cooks the fastest. And we're talking about a standard fire and a standard pan. So everything is benoni, the normal way that you would do it. And that will give you the shiur. And everybody knows what an egg looks like. Everybody knows what a standard pan looks like. And so therefore, what are you worried about? That's the shiur. You want to measure it? You want to quantify it? That'll be much harder because they're just talking about what the standard was. But that's why here you don't see Rav Ashi asking, oh, what egg, what pan, all those types of questions that he was asked by the Dekel. So, Haltam Amar Rav Yehuda ben Beteira, Kedei Ligmoa Shlosh Beitzim Zo Achar Zo. The first Braita he said to swallow three eggs, one after the next. And again, as David's pointing out, that would make it impossible for him to have the same Shita as Rabbi Akiva, who said Kedei Ligmoa. Although, again, now once you reconcile the Braito and say that it's Kedei Litzlot Uli Glamoa, then maybe it is the same shiur. Ha-chamar Kedei Ligoma'a. And over here, he just talks about swallowing what seemingly is from the statement before, the roasted egg that was done before. So he says, L'dvarav d'Rabbi Akiva kamar. Yudim and Beteira, and this Braito is not saying it, is not saying his own opinion, but according to Rabbi Akiva. D'kamar b'shamirim b'sha'irina and b'tzliya b'gmiya. Says, according to Rabbi Akiva, who says that you set the duration based on roasting an egg plus swallowing it, ema shiur gmiya lechuda. Why don't you just give one shiur over here? Kedei legameya shlosh beitzim zo achar zo. Dehainu tzliya v'gmiya. That is equated to the roasting and the swallowing of an egg would be just the swallowing of three eggs in a row. All he's doing is, why are you involving two activities? Make it just one activity and it'll be easier either to estimate or to understand what the duration is. Here you're talking about roasting and swallowing. Just say, swallow three eggs, and then you don't have to get involved with the roasting at all. That's what Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteima was suggesting in that previous braita, not stating his opinion, but rather trying to encourage Rabbi Akiva to use a single standard rather than two activities. Rabbi Elazar ben Irmiyahu Omer, Kadei Shikshur Gardi Nima, Bai Ravashi, Demerchak, O Demikarev. Are they far apart? Or are they close together? So again here, Rav Ashi, when we deal with non-standard measurements, Rav Ashi is trying to understand. When it says here, we're talking about a weaver that is tying a knot or bringing two strings together. Are those two strings that are adjacent to each other? Or is that a string from one side of the bag and the other side of the bag and he's bringing them together? Which obviously, we're talking about very short amounts of time, but that would be, on a percentage basis, would add a significant amount of time to the duration over here. Chanin ben Pinchas Omer Kedei Shetoshit Yada Letoch Piyah Litel Kisam by Rav Ashi Demehadek O Delo Mehadek. When we say that she reaches into her mouth to pull out something stuck between her teeth, is that something deeply seated in the teeth that takes a while to get out? Is that something that's loosely caught in the teeth, then it's easy to get out. Teku. Again, because you're using a non-standard measurement, you can't just say, well, it's a benoni piece stuck in your mouth. That doesn't work. By an egg, by a palm tree, by certain items, objects, you could talk about benoni, the standard size of that object. When you're talking about certain things like getting stuck between the teeth or a weaver tying a knot, there's no benoni. There's no just standard amount. You have to then give more definition to it, and that's where Rashi is querying in each of these cases. Time it takes her to reach out to the basket and take out a loaf of bread. By Ravashi, dimahadek, odelohadek. Is the bread stuck in the basket, meaning that it's a tight fit, and therefore it's harder to get the bread out of the basket? Or is it a loose fit? It's a big basket, and it's easy to get out. Bechadeta, obatika. Are we talking about an older basket or a newer basket? An older basket already has wear and tear, and therefore it's very smooth. It's easy to get the bread out. A newer basket, especially when you're talking about weaving with reeds or with any other item that's a little sharp edges to it, the bread's going to get caught on it as you take it out of the basket. Bechamima or bekrira. Are we talking about hot bread or bread that's already cooled off? Because hot bread is a little softer and doesn't pull away so easily, it starts to be a little stretchy. Whereas when you're talking about bread that's already cooled off, then it comes out quickly. Bidechite over the visare. Are we talking about wheat, bread made out of wheat? Are we talking about bread made out of barley? Because the wheat bread, Rashi calls it smoother and comes out better than the sorim. I would say maybe that has to do with the nature of the bread, whether it is more solid or it's more crumbly. So that the chitim would be a more of a solid bread. The sare would give you a more of a crumbly bread, and therefore it'd be harder to get it out because it falls apart, it crumbles. And the same thing here, berikicha obakusha. Talking about soft bread? Or are we talking about something that is harder? Again, when it's a hard bread, like it's a provincial type of bread, then the crust is hard and you can just pull it out, no problem. When you're talking about a softer bread, some wonder bread, you have white bread where it's nice and soft, it has, again, a little bit of a give to it, elasticity to it, and therefore, it's harder to get out. And again, teiku, we leave that unresolved. Ravashi, it seems to me, only queries in places where we're giving, again, non-standard types of definitions, and therefore, he's trying to understand these non-standard shiurim, what exactly is meant by them. So now, I'm Rabbi Yitzchak by Yosef, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. So here we have a suggestion along the lines of Chadashi Urahu, which is that, kol echad ve'echad be'atzmo shir. That these shiurim were the result or the product of personal experience, quantification. Each one determined this through their personal experimentation, experience, and they're giving definition to what they saw or the duration that they saw it took. Now, whether that means now, chadashiurahu, that it's all one chadashiurahu, or do we say that it's somewhat subjective? Meaning that it's not as clear-cut as saying that there's some objective standard. You see here that there is nuanced differences. The problem with that is, Vaika ben Azai, delo nosif. What are you going to do with the fact that ben Azai never got married? It's based on the Gemara in Yevamot. There the Gemara discusses the mitzvah of pru urvu. And the Gemara there has a number of drashot with regards to pruvu. A person doesn't keep pruvu, is kilu shofich damim. It's as if he kills. One of those drashot is brought by Ben Azai. The Talmidim over there say to Ben Azai, yesh na'e doresh, b'ne'aya oseh. The people give a nice drasha and they do. There are some people that don't have a good drasha. But you are na'e doresh, v'ne oseh. You give a great drasha, but you don't do it. Because Ben Azai is saying that if you're not Mikayim Priri Rivya, Skilu Shofich Damim, and meantime, he's not getting married. Ben Azai answers them, Mani Aseh, Libi Chashka Batorah, I'm in love with Torah, and therefore, there's no room for love of a woman here because I'm so captured by Torah. And then, Itkayim Ayidei Acherim, other people will take care of the issue of Priri Rivya. That's Ben Azai's statement over there. Here, the Gemara seems to reconcile with that, which is that Ben Azai did not get married, and that's the question. Gemara says, so one answer is that he got married, but then he separated from his wife. Other possibilities, he got it as a mesorah from his Rebbe. It's interesting because Rabbi Akiva is Ben Azai's Rebbe. So you have to say is that Ben Azai did not have only one Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva. Otherwise, why is he giving a shiur that is differentiated from that of Rabbi Akiva? That the secrets of Hashem come to those that fear Him. Meaning that even though he didn't have any personal experience, he was able to reach this conclusion or this information because of the fact that Hashem discloses this information to those that are close to Him. That bothers some of the Mepharshim, because then how could we use it as a halachic basis if he's only getting the information because he's getting special disclosure about what's going on in Shemayim, or he gets special secrets of Shemayim? And that might be the answer. That might be, that's why we don't paskin like Ben Azai over here, because Ben Azai really brings down a shita that is lo b'shamayim, something that is not considered to be in heaven, and his sourcing of the information is therefore cannot be used to come to a halachic decision. The other problem we have is that the Gemara in Ketubot says, both on Samach Gimel and Yevamot, and also on Samach Gimel and Ketubot, that Rabbi Akiva's daughter did for Ben Azai what Rachel did for Rabbi Akiva. That means that Ben Azai married Rabbi Akiva's daughter, and then Ben Azai went to the Beit Midrash to learn and left his wife behind, just like her mother did this for Rabbi Akiva, and he went away to learn for 24 years. So too, the daughter of Rachel did the same thing for Ben Azai, meaning that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But that means that he was married to the daughter of Rabbi Akiva. So now, how do you reconcile that with the Gemara in Yevamot, who says that Ben Azai never got married? And with our Gemara over here. So the Balei Tosafot there in Ketubot bring two answers. And those answers relate to how the Gemara explains it over here. The Tosafot over there says, "Im tamar va'repair kama desota parich va'yika ben azai delo nosif." Don't we have Ben Azai who never got married? Ulahal lishna demishane. According to the lashon here, that answers nosif uperash atashapir, that he got married and then divorced. Then it's easy to understand. Or he got married and he separated from her. Then you could explain he did marry the daughter of Rabbi Akiva, but that marriage either didn't last very long, or even if they were married, they weren't together. That he separated from her and went to learn Torah, and that they weren't really a couple in the married sense. But the Ha'ol Lishna, but according to the other Lishanot that we bring over here, there were two Lishanot that suggest that Ben Azai never got married. Well, those two Lishanot that say that Ben Azai never got married, how do you explain the Gemara in Ketubot that says that he married the daughter of Rabbi Akiva? So there's a vote over here, says Yesh Lamar. The Apagav the Kamar Hocha, the Avda Hochi the Ben Azai, Mikom Makom lo Nas'a Ela Be'irusin. What is meant by the Gemara in Ketubot was not that he literally married her, or that Rabbi Akiva's daughter did this for Ben Azai, but rather they got halachically engaged, but never consummated the marriage. So that would actually solve many of your problems. It explains why Ben Azai had no experience, and that's what the Gemara is challenging over here. It explained that he did have a relationship with the daughter of Rabbi Akiva, but it didn't go very far. It only went through Erusin. And also explained the Gemara in Yevamot as to why the Chachamim are questioning Ben Azai. That's nice, your drasha, but you don't act on your drasha. And he says, "Livi chashka b'Torah," that I fell in love with the Torah. So that would help to reconcile all of them. That would be according to the opinions that say he never got married at all. According to the opinion over here, they're getting married and then divorced or separated very quickly. Then you would have to reconcile it in the same manner, but just say that there was a consummation of the marriage, and that's why he had some information about the experience. Darash Rav Avira. Avira was Doresh. Zimnin Amar Le Mishmei de Rabbi Ami. Sometimes you quote in the name of Rabbi Ami. Zimnin Amar Le Mishmei de Rabbi Asi. Sometimes you say over in the name of Rabbi Asi. Ha'uchel, kol ha'uchel lechem, kol ha'uchel lechem below nitila tidaim, kilu ba'al isha zona. Anybody who eats bread without washing their hands first is the equivalent of someone who engages with a harlot. Shine Amar. That's the pasuk that we quoted before. So Gemara is going back to darshan that pasuk, which is ki ba'ad isha zona ad kikar lechem. What's the relationship between an isha zona and a kikar lechem. So here, Rav Avir is explaining to you what the meaning of that pasuk is, that just like it's inappropriate or it's illicit to be together with an isha zona, so too, the same is true if someone eats bread without washing their hands. That's a nice drusha, but what is the philosophical connection between these two items? So you could suggest that both of them are issues of hana'ah min olam, getting benefit or enjoyment out of the world. And there are certain rules about how you get enjoyment out of the world. The Maharal suggests over here, it's a nice idea, that both bi'ah and eating of bread are items which are mundane. I even call them animalistic, instinctive activities that a person undertakes. But there is a requirement in Judaism to be mikadesh, those items, or to do it in such a form or manner that is kadosh. So, bi'ah with the zona is inappropriate because you need kiddushin, you need the proper context in order to have bi'ah. So you have to do it through a process of kiddusha. Netilat yadayim is the kadesh et yadayim. It's a way to start the meal, it's a way to approach a meal. And therefore, you need that kiddush to change the meal into simply that animalistic instinctive behavior into something that is now avodat Hashem and holy. And that would be the connection between them, which is a very nice idea that the Maharal expresses here of the connection between these two mundane activities and the way that we are mikadesh them to change them from just being simply mundane activities into something that is avodat Hashem and unique. So Amar Rava, the way you're expressing it now is, Hai ba'ad isha zona ad kikach lechem. Wait a minute. That's not what it says in the pasuk. The pasuk says, ba'ad isha zona ad kikach lechem. For you, it should say, ba'ad kikach lechem ad isha zona mi ba'ile. Should Jay say it's just the opposite? Because the way that Rav Avir is explaining it is, isha zona is the mashal. The nimshal is the kikach lechem. Which is that the kikach lechem is talui in the isha zona. You should say, ba'ad kikach lechem ad isha zona. But the way that the pasuk is read, it's the other way around, which is ba'ad isha zona ad kikar lechem, which seems to me that the isha zona is being compared to the kikar lechem. Elamar Rava kol ba'ad isha zona nesof mevakesh kikar lechem. The Rava says no, it's the opposite way around. It's a drasha about a person who engages with an isha zona. Someone who engages with an isha zona, in the end, he is mevakesh kikar lechem. He's going to be poverty stricken, and he's going to have to go out and beg for bread, or he's going to be hungry in the end. Whether that's a midah keneged midah, this person put no bounds on his hana'ah and acted inappropriately, enjoying the world without any qualifications. So in the end, the midah keneged midah is that he will be missing even the most simplest of items, which is food that he needs. Or you can say that it's a practical idea that if a person is going to expend their money on engaging with an isha zona, then in the end he'll be poverty stricken because he's wasting all his money chasing after hana'ot ha'olam. And it may not be limited to an isha zona, it's just a general approach to life where he's willing to expend money without any consideration to have hana'ah. And that person will be left the kikar lechem in the end without looking around for kikar lechem. Amar Rav Zika, Amar Rav Elazar, kol ha'mezalzel b'netilat yadayim ne'ekar min ha'olam. Any person who is mezalzel, denigrates the mitzvah of netilat yadayim, ne'ekar min olam, is uprooted from the world. Now here Rashi says that kol mezalzel is something that someone who does this on a continuous, frequent basis. That's what it means, ha-mezalzel, with the hey ha-yidiyah, which is that this is a person who is a mezalzel. Not simply mizalzel, that sometimes you do it, sometimes you don't do it. This is a person that doesn't do it at all, and that's what's a hey, ha mizalzel. If you took away the hey, which some of the girsot have, then it would be called mizalzel benetilat yadayim, nekar min olam, then mizalzel over there would mean simply someone who sometimes doesn't do it, that he's not so careful about it. But here, with the hey idea, the way that we have it in our girsot indicates a continuous denigration. Tosfot here raises an interesting issue. He says that the Gemara in Shabbat says, Shlosha dvarim mevim et adam lidei aniyut. There are three things that bring a person to poverty. Ha mizalzel min etilat yadayim is one of them. So Tosfot says over here, it says nekar min olam. Over there it says aniyut. And therefore Tosfot reconciles them this way. It's very interesting. Benira dezilzol shemizalzel batamid. Person who is continuously denigrating it, like Rashi defines mizalzel over here. Onsho akira alidei aniyut. His punishment is to be uprooted from the world through poverty. Dikashem imita, which is worse than death. And he says that in other places where it says ne'akar me'olam and it means to die, there's different. Not everywhere in Shas does the word ne'akar me'olam mean the same thing. They all mean death, but death can come in many different shapes and forms. It can be a quick death, it can be an easy death, or it can be a prolonged death. And the way Tosafot is describing it over here, aniyut is a dragged out type of death, or the way that the Gemara expressed it, we saw this in the Gemara in the Darim and in Nazir, which is that ani chashuv kemet. So there is this aspect of aniyut that is also assumed with mita. Tosafot over here says that aniyut is even worse than mita. Am Rav Chir Ba'ashim Arav, Mayim Rishonim, Tzirich Sheyagbiya Yadav Lamala. When you do Mayim Rishonim, you have to lift your hands upward. Mayim Achronim, when you wash your hands from Mayim Achronim, Tzirich Sheyashpil Yadav Lamato. You have to tilt your hands downward. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a bride that supports this. And Oto Yadav Tzirich Sheyagbiya Yadav Lamala. Shema Yitzua Mayim Chutz Laperek. Now we get a definition, we get an explanation for why. Because if you don't lift your hands up, we're worried about the fact that water will exit outside of the perek. Perek is the location until which you have to wash your daim. It is a machloket rishonim. Most rishonim believe it means until the knuckles. Rashi, in numerous places, says it's until the wrist. We are choshesh rishitat Rashi, and therefore when we wash the daim, we always wash up to the wrist. With the exception of times where there might be a deoraita problem with washing one's hands, like on Yom HaKippurim, Tisha B'Av, which mirrors that the same restrictions of Yom HaKippurim. Over there, we tell you only wash up to your knuckles, because there we go to the Ikar Adin, which is the robe Rishonim believe until the knuckles. And we're not choshesh for the shita until the perek, until the wrist. And there is a daya in the Chulin that the perek is the elbow, but that's more of a dat yachid. The major or the mainstream opinions are between the wrist and the knuckles, which is the perek that we're speaking about. The Gemara explains what is the issue here. Shema Yitzu Amayim Chutz LaPerek. Maybe the water will drip outside of the normal range of where you wash. Then it'll come back and be mitame yadayim. Let's give some background to this. Rashi here explains that, the Rashi explains it pretty well. If you look in the Mishnah Brura in Kuch Samech Bet, he gives an introduction there to the whole siman. And his introduction over there, he explains exactly this Gemara and this issue, which is that the purpose of netilat yadayim is part of a takanat chachamim, zeret chachamim, because of sarach truma, which is that the yadayim are yaskioniotim. Your hands are touching things all the time, even unconsciously, even without thought, and therefore they might come into contact with tuma. So in order to, first of all, remind a person, or to also the minakke yadayim, clean them in terms of the sanitizing of the hands, that there's a requirement to wash one's hands. The way that one does that is they pour water over the hand once, and then they pour water over the hand a second time. The reason for that is, when you pour the water on the hand the first time, that water is taking the tumah off the hand, but the water itself becomes tameh. Or, if you're talking about the cleanliness of the hand, sanitizing the hand, then the first water that goes through the hand is the water that picks up the dirt off the hand. Then the second time you wash the hand, that is to remove either the water that's tamei on the hand, or to remove the dirty water from the hand. So now what the Gemara suggests is here, if you don't hold your hands upright while you're doing the washing, then what's going to end up happening is that you'll start washing. In between the first time that you wash your hand, you'll lift it up a little bit. Some water will drip down past your wrist, or past your knuckles, depending on which way you think is the perek. Then you're going to wash the second time. Wash off all the water that was on your hand, and then you'll put your hand down. When you put your hand down, the water that dripped below your wrist beforehand, or below the knuckles, now will start to go back to the hand. When it goes back to the hand or back above the knuckles, that water is tameh, because it was never washed away by the second water. And now your hands are tameh again, and you're back to square one. So because of that, the Chachamim suggests that you hold your hands up. Another solution to the problem is that the Mishnayot in Yadayim suggests that this process of washing twice is only necessary when you don't pour a revit of mayim on your hands, because then you need two washings. If you pour a revit of water on your hands, then you do not need to wash a second time, or everything gets washed off. I assume it's because of the continuous flow of water that the first water that's there gets washed off, and then you wouldn't have any of these problems because you're putting a revit on. Question of that as to relate to whether that Ravit, Mayim is talking about up to the knuckles, like the majority opinions. We are choshish like Shita Rashi, maybe you need more water than that. But today, where we use a lot of water, it's less of an issue, because as long as you pour that amount of water in the one shot onto the hand, then hopefully you've covered everything. The bigger problem today is that people don't wash all the areas in their hand. They don't open up their hands, or they don't hold their hand in a position where the water can reach all the different sides of one's hand. It's, you know, best to open them up and hold them sideways. Generally, then you can get most of the hand in one shot. If you hold them upright, it would also help with that. That makes you can cover the whole area. When you put them down, then it's much harder to capture all the spaces on the hand, because there are areas that the water doesn't reach in those situations. So it says to be careful for that, or try to be careful for that. So Mishnah Berurah points out that it's only possible to do, really, if someone else is washing your hands. If you yourself are washing your hands, it's much harder to hold your hand up and pour the water over it and keep it up and then try it. Because you're going to switch hands afterwards. And so when you switch hands to pour on the other hand, by definition, you can't keep it upright that whole time. Here, the Mishnah Berurah says over here, it can only be true when someone else is pouring the water. Because by definition, if you're doing it yourself, you can hold your hand up when you're washing it, but as soon as you take that hand to wash the other hand, by definition, that hand's going to go down. You can't keep that hand upright while you're washing the other hand. It's a pretty acrobatic trick to do. But if you don't have someone else to do it, you should pour a full revit of water on each hand. So you put the revit on, you don't have to hold your hands up, as we mentioned before. There's enough water where the mayim shneim aren't relevant anymore, because the water all washed away in that first washing. That's one issue. The other issue is, and this is brought up by the Geonim, which is that there are other reasons besides what the Gemara mentions over here to raise one hand, and that is from the Psukim. They bring a Pasuk from Yeshayahu, which is Vayinatlem Vayinesem. Nitila over there doesn't mean Nitila Jedayim, but they're actually, that would be the same, that he picks them up, that that's another reason to hold them up. Or the pasuk of Su'u Yedechem Kodesh Uvarchu Et Hashem, to hold your hands up and then to give bracha to Hashem. So based on those psukim, they also, the Geonim mention the raising of the Etzpotav is not simply the practical aspect here, but there's also another more ruchani aspect to holding up one's hands at the time that they're doing the Nitilat Yadayim. The Mishnah Berurah here says in the end that as long as you keep them in the same direction for the duration, then it won't matter. Because if you hold them down the whole time, then you'll end up in the same position, which is that the water's not going to drip below the perek, because you wash them and you continue to wash them in the same direction. The thing you need to be careful of is changing, moving from up to down or having the water drip back. So, Omar, the mata iti b'gmara tzrich lak bia yadav. The fact that you have to hold your hands up. That's why if you're holding them upright when you poured the first water on them. Or if you're holding them parallel. Because then we worry about the water going above the wrist or the knuckles. Then they have to remain in that upright position until you dry them off. So then the water doesn't go back on the fingers. If you're always holding them down from the beginning, then you don't have that issue, because the water can never come up the hand, and this issue won't even be entered. So the issue is really solving for a problem as to when it's done. If you started this way, then you have to finish this way. But if you don't start that way, you can prevent the whole problem from happening by holding your hands down. He says, that a number of people don't like this suggestion. Because of the fear, what I mentioned before, which is that when you wash in that manner, the water doesn't reach all the fingers, doesn't reach all those locations. And therefore you should keep them upright during the Mayim Rishonim, even though that could generate the other problem, but it's still better because you actually will wash the entirety of the hand rather than only a portion of the hand. And then he brings on the Magen Avraham, that from the Kabbalah, we have these psukim that we quote about, Su'u Yedechem Kodesh, Vayinatlem, Vayinasem, which indicate that there's other reasons besides just the practical reasons to hold one's hands up, that there's a certain aspect of tefillah and kiddush before Hashem, that when one holds their hands up, and therefore there are other reasons to hold one's hands up, not just these practical considerations. Anybody who does hold up their hands when they wash until the Yadayim, should continue to hold them up through the time of drying their hands, because otherwise it defeats the purpose. Because then the water that went will come back down. The point is you have to get to reach the point where you've dried off, and then it's no longer an issue for the water to drip down. There is a machloket here between the Rishonim, which is, can the water be mitaher beyond the perek? The way Rashi describes it over here is, you'll wash the first time, you'll have the tamei water, it'll drip below the wrist. Then, you'll wash the second time, and you wash kahalacha. Washing kahalacha means you only wash up to the wrist. Therefore, you don't catch the water that went below your wrist. What's implied from Rashi is, if you did wash that area as well, then you would have been fine, as long as you captured all the water that's there. There are other Rishonim that believe, when you wash your daim, you can only take off the tumah, or the water of tumah, on your yad itself. Once it moves beyond the perek, you can put as much water as you want on it, it won't change the status of that water, it'll always remain tameh. Because the relevant area is only from the wrist down. Anything above the wrist is considered as if you didn't do anything, as if you didn't do any act of nitilah. And so therefore, it won't help. So there's two opinions there. We're choshish for that opinion as well. And therefore, if this does happen, you need to dry your hands and you need to start all over again. Again, the Mishnah Berurah says it's very important just to make sure that if you are washing your hands, that you capture the entirety of the area that you're trying to wash, whether that's up to the knuckles or the wrist. You should make sure that you cover it entirely in water. And then for Mayim Achronim, the reason we want to wash in a downward position is because you actually want the water to leave the hands. The water that's on your hands now picked up the melech domit or whatever dirt's on the hands, and you want it to wash away from the hand, away from your body completely. So how do you do that? You put the hands in a downward position and it washes away from the body rather than towards the body. But in Itilat Yadayim Rishonim, we're okay if it goes below the wrist or below the knuckles, because as long as it doesn't come back to the hand, then you're fine. But here, where we're trying to remove it completely, we don't want the water on you. We don't want it getting captured on your forearm just because you cleaned it off your hands. We want it cleaned off entirely. Anybody who eats bread without drying their hands, it's as if they eat lechem tamei. It's as if they eat lechem tamei. Shnei Amari brings the pasuk, "V'yom Hashem kacha yochlu bnei Yisrael lechem tamei." That in this manner, bnei Yisrael will eat their lechem tamei. So as Rashi says here, "Kol ochel b'leoni guv yadayim davar ma'usu v'chashuv ketumah." It's something that's disgusting, and it's like tumah. Shnei Amar kacha yochlu bnei Yisrael lechem tamei. Alma davar mius karei tumah. There, Yechezel is not speaking about real tumah. He's speaking about something that is disgusting or not proper, and he calls it tameh. So that's the way Rashi states it. Others state that there is a real issue of tumah, which is that the water on the hands has a certain din of tumah, and if you take water and from the hands and touch it onto a food, it conveys tumah to the food, because mashkim have a takana of generate rishon the tumah because of the liquids of azav, which are ava tumah. So because of that, we made all liquids have that status that they're like an ava tuma. So then you could really talk about real tuma over here in the sense that these mashkim are going to convey tuma to the bread, and therefore we want your hands completely dry. The Shulchan Aruch brings down about this, vina gveim heitev, kodem shivatza. You should make sure to wipe your hands, dry them off well before you break the bread. Shochel b'li niguv yadayim kilu ochel lechem tamei. Quotes our Gemara over here. So see if he's eating lechem tamei. And that is actually important because many people, after they wash Tehillat Yadayim, never really dry their hands off well, and there many times their hands are still moist or wet, and so you have to be careful to make sure to dry your hands completely after Tehillat Yadayim. And then the Mishnah Berurah over here qualifies this and says that if this is really a din mishum tumah, real tumah, then if you wash the second time, or you wash with a full revi'it, or you do something that removes the tumah, it no longer is relevant that you have to have your hands absolutely dry before you touch the bread. Although, the Marshal is cholek on zeh, because he says, the ikar niguv shetiknu shum miyus. That the reason that they did this is because it's disgusting, or it's inappropriate to have the hands be wet when you touch the food, and therefore it would be applicable even if we're not talking about issues of tumah. Umay ve'eshet ish nefesh yikara tatsud. So now that's the end of the pasuk that we quoted before. The latter half of that pasuk is Veishit Ish Nefesh Shikara Tatsud, that the wife of another man will trap or entrap even a very special or unique nefesh. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Adam Sheish Bo Gasut Ruach L'Bsof Nichshal Veishit Ish. Rabbi Abba says that don't read it as Yikar being something expensive, special, unique. Rather, yakar means that this is a person who holds himself up as being unique or expensive, which is that he's a gas ruach. This person is haughty. So a person who's haughty in the end ends up tripping up with eshet ish. Shenemar, the eshet ish, nefesh yikara tatsud. So here he's defined nefesh yikara as somebody who elevates themselves, puts themselves up. Amarova, hai nefesh yikara, nefesh gvoha mi ba'ile. Says that's not the right thing to say. Nefesh yikara means a precious soul. Doesn't mean a soul that is held up or one that is haughty. That's number one. Va'ot, he tatsud mi ba'ile. That she will capture it, it should say, not that tatsud will be captured. Because it's the result of the haughtiness, not a result of being together with the eshet ish. And the other thing I would say here about this, the haughtiness is, why does haughtiness lead to the violation of eshet ish? Because a person who is haughty sees themselves as not being bounded or having no limitations. They see themselves as being above others, and therefore not subject to the limitations of the rules. And therefore, eshet ish, which is out of bounds for everyone else, for this Baal Gaiva, or this person who's a Gas Ruach, he doesn't see those boundaries anymore. He thinks that everything is his, or everything's within his purview. And that's why maybe that's a result of being a Gas Ruach, is that he violates Eshet Ish. The Rava suggests otherwise, Elam HaRava called a Baal Eshet Ish, Afilu Lamad Torah. A person, if he violates is in violation of adultery, even if he's learned Torah, Dichtiba Yikarai Hi Mipninim, that it is more precious than jewels. That's what is described Torah. The Kohen Gadol Shnichnas Lifnai V'Lifnim. It's more precious than even the Kohen Gadol that goes in to the inner chambers. From here, the Gemara Darshans, that a Mamzer, Talmid Chacham, goes before a Kohen Gadol on Aretz. Because Torah has that ability to elevate the individual, to take the first honor in all places, even greater than Yichus, even greater than anything else that we have. So that's what it's referring to. The nefesh yikara over here is even a nefesh that is involved or steeped in Torah. He has an adulterous affair. It won't be forgiven because the Torah won't wash away or wash over all that just happened. He titzudena, the dinah shel gehinom. Then that will leave him in gehinom, meaning that even though Torah normally protects the individual, normally it should be a zchut that protects him, it doesn't protect him enough to prevent him from ending up in Gehinom if he has an adulterous affair. I'm Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bayochai, called Adam Sheish Bo Gasut Aruach, Kilo Oveid Abudat Kochavim. Anybody who has Gas Ruach as a Baal Gaiva is as if he worships Avodah Zarah. Ktiv Ocha Tovat Hashem Kol Veleiv. It's an abomination, anybody who is Kol Gaveleiv, anybody who is haughty. That you're not allowed to bring Avodah Zarah, Toiva, the abomination, into your house. So the word Toiva is used by Avodah Zarah, the word Toiva is used by a Baal Gaiva. So Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, sees them being equated, or that Gasa the Ruach is as if he worships Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Yochanan Didei, Rabbi Yochanan himself Amar, Kilu Kafar Biikar. As if he denied the existence of God, Shneemar, Viram Levavecha. You will become haughty, v'shachachta teshem elkecha, and you will forget God. It's a pasuk brought in the beginning of Parshat Ekev, with regards to when you become wealthy and successful, instead of attributing that success and that wealth to Akash Baruch Hu, you're going to say, kochiv yotzim yadi, asali et achay lezeh. It was all my doing. It's all my success. And in doing so, you're going to forget God. Meaning that there's no room, when a person takes all the credit, and the person is a gvaleiv, there's no room for God anymore. It's the expression that the Gemara in Kiddushin says that a person, kol aleich b'komas kufa, everybody who walks around upright, meaning that they walk around with the gas of the ruach, kilu dochek raglei shchina. It's as if he's pushing away the feet of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because the person who is a goveleiv has no room for God in his world. There's one God in his world, that's himself. And that he becomes, in a sense, he worships himself in his world because of the way that he thinks of himself or the way that he conducts himself. And anybody who's a Gavaleiv cannot be a true Oved Hashem. In a sense, is denying Hashem, because being an Oved Hashem or accepting the yoke of heaven upon you means that you are a person of humility and humbleness, because in reflection or in contrast to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, we're all nothing and we're all measly. And therefore, that should bring a tremendous amount of humbleness and humility. And also, if that's the case, if you're really an Ovid Hashem, then Hashem tells you to treat other people in the proper manner. The fact that you don't already shows that there's no room for Hashem in your world because you think too much of yourself to abide by what Hashem has instructed you. Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina Amar Kilu Baal Kol HaRayot, that a person who is a Goved Lev is as if he violated all of the illicit relations in the Torah. Tivacha Tovat Hashem Kol Goved Lev. So the same pasuk that we quoted before from Mishlei. And then, Uchtiv Otam, it says over there, Kiyat Kol HaTevot HaEl. All of these Toivot, that's what the nations that you're going to conquer did, that's what they did in Mitzrayim, and that's referring to the Parsha of Arayot. Ulam Arkilu Bana Bama. The person is a Baal Gaiva, is as if he built a Bama. Shneamar, Chidlu Lachem Min Adam Asher Neshama Popo, Ki Bameh Nechshavu. Al Tikra Bameh. But rather, Ella Bama. So over there it says, Chaluda Chemin Adam, you should separate away from an individual, Asher Nishama Beapo, it just has the breath of life in him. What makes him significant? What makes him important? And we're just mere human beings. So why would you make such a big deal, or why would you consider them? So the Gemara says, Al Tikri Bama, Ella Bama. That means that, now don't call it Bama, what is he considered by Bama? And Bama means that a person who holds themselves of high esteem is as if he builds a Bama. That can be for two reasons. One is that he doesn't follow the Tzibur. He doesn't go up to the Mikdash Min Korbanot. He does it where he wants. Again, he runs the show. It's his rules. Similar to what we said before, it's Kilo Aveda, but Azariah doesn't consider a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So over here, he's Bone Bama. Or, like we saw in the Gemara and Nidarim, that a person who takes a Neder and it's Mikayim the Neder is Kilo Bana Bama V'Ikrivalea. And over there, the Ran brought from the Yerushalmi, that is because that person thinks they're doing something good. When a person becomes a Gas Ruach, or Gavad Lev, he's haughty, he thinks that he knows what he's supposed to do. He thinks that he's doing the right things because he thinks he's always right. He doesn't take criticism, he doesn't accept what anyone else has to say. And therefore, he's bringing Bamot, as if that's the right way to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though it's clearly the wrong way to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The parak in Yeshayahu, parak, which we're quoting, there in that parak it says, Enei gavot adam shafel v'shachrum anashim v'nizgav Hashem levado b'yom ahu. Because on that day, the only one that will be exalted is the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So in contrast to the exalting of the Kodesh Baruch Hu, man should make himself humble and take on humility. And that's where the pasuk at the end of the parak quotes, Chidlu lachem min adam asher nishama be'apo. Ki b'men yechshavu. Right, what is he considered? What is he at all? So now the Gemara, after that, goes back and says, Miyad yad yinakeh. And that goes back to the pasuk that we quoted from Mishlei, Tovat Hashem kol gvalev, yad yad lo yinakeh. So we darshed in the first half of the pasuk, which Tovat Hashem kol gvalev, that it's an abomination to Hashem, anybody who is of a haughty nature. But then the Gemara now wants to know, Yad the Yad lo yinakeh. From hand to hand, he will not be cleansed, or he will not be forgiven. So what is the meaning of Yad the Yad lo yinakeh? Amrav, akola bal eshet ish, afilo ikno lo akosh baruch shemayim v'aretz ka'amrav avino. Person who violates the iser of adultery, has an extramarital affair, afilo ikno lo akosh baruch shemayim v'aretz ka'amrav avino. Even if he brought HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world, made known Hashem's presence in the world, in the heavens and the earth, like Avram Avinu. It's Minyana Diyoma in the Parshiyot HaShavua. Tichtebe, Arimoti Yadi El Hashem, Kel Elyon Kone Shamayim Varetz. When Avram defeats the Arba Melachim, and Malkitzedek comes to greet him, he says, Arimoti Yadi El Hashem, Kel Elyon Kone Shamayim Varetz. I raise my hand to Hashem, who is the Kone Shamayim Varetz. So here, Yad, you see the word Yad being used over here, with the Kinyan Shemayim Varetz, that Avram provided the Kinyan Shemayim Varetz to Hashem. So even if you're as great as Avram Avinu, if you engage in adultery, then lo yinakeh, you will not be forgiven. Lo yinakeh migdina shel gan heaven. Kashalu derbe Rabbi Shila, ha the Yad lo yinakeh, yadi. Rabbi Shila didn't like this interpretation of Rav, because it doesn't explain the words properly. It's not yad le yad, from hand to hand. It should say, yaday lo yinakeh. His hands will never be cleansed. But it's not about passing from hand to hand. It's simply that his hands will never be forgiven for this sin. So he suggests, El Amrei Debei Rabbi Shila, Afilu Kibel Torah Ke Moshe Rabbeinu. Something that was passed me yad the yad, the Torah was handed from Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu. Tehtebe mimino esht dat lamo. From Hashem's right hand, the fire came from him. So there, like Hashem figuratively passes the Torah and fire from him to Moshe. Lo yinakem idina shel Gehinom. He will not be protected from the fires of Gehinom if he violates the Isser of adultery. So despite the fact that he has Torah, like we said before, this will not protect him if he sins in adultery. Kashele the Rabbi Yochanan, hi the yad the yad. This bothered Rabbi Yochanan, this interpretation, because it's not yad li yad, from hand to hand, ela yad mi yad, hand from hand. It was Hashem passing the Torah to us. So you should say yad mi yad lo yinakeh. The hand that accepted the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not be forgiven. If you're as great as Moshe Rabbeinu, if you have adultery, you will not be forgiven. But then it should say, Yad Miyad. By the way, what is Yad Liyad? El Rabbi Yochanan, Afilu Aset Staka B'Seter. Even if a person does Staka in private, which is the best way to do Staka, and is a tremendous mitzvah, Tichtiv, Matan B'Seter Yichpe'af, that the person who gives quietly and does Staka in a quiet way will subdue the anger, meaning that it will protect them from punishment. It will protect them from the evil things that could come upon him. And as we say, Staka tatzil mimavet, that Staka saves from death. So even that person who has that mitzvah in hand, which should protect them from anything, lo yinakem idina shel Gehinom. He will not be saved from the fires of Gehinom if he violates the Isser of adultery. So we see here that the Isser of Ishet Ish is so fundamental and defiling of the individual that if they violate this Isur, even if they have all this greatness associated with them, if they have all this protection from Torah and Mitzvot, it still will not protect them because he's abrogated something that's so basic. Thinking, first of all, someone else's wife, he's stolen from someone else, he's ruined another family, probably ruined his own family as well. This is someone who doesn't live within bounds. This is someone who doesn't understand what it means to Kedusha. He's missing a lot of the fundamentals as we see over here, including possibly he's Kilu Ovedo Varezera, Kilu Kofer Beikar. See all the terms that are being used here. This is a person who has some serious flaw in them, and therefore all the other things that he's done now are tainted with this act of Ni'uf.